Okay, what I did for this study is I took a security standard. It's an ISO standard that was adopted by the South African Bureau of Standards.
Yeah.
And it looks at security, all the different security items that an institution should look at. And then I said, okay, if I took this security standard, how would I adapt it for identity theft and specifically looking at phishing in an institution?
Oh, okay. That'll be very interesting. So obviously what you need to understand that I'm from the business side. I head up the internet channel.
Okay.
So I've got broad-based context of IT components and ISO standards on a very, very high level, but I probably won't be able to speak nuts and bolts if that's what you require. So I can speak conceptually as to what's happening in the industry and how we see things being used or misused, etc., and on a business level what we're trying to do to curb it. But in terms of real nuts and bolts and fact, you know, I'm probably not the right person, if that's okay.
It might be. What I would need to know is, for example, if I'm looking at a company should have an information security policy document, so then would you be able to confirm that
we do have
you
that.
Do have
absolutely.
One? So yeah, it's questions like that.
Okay, no, that's fine.
Okay, so that was the first one. Then the information security policy document, is it reviewed regularly?
Yes. Monthly at this moment in time.
Okay, good. Okay, then within the internal organization, is there a process to authorize? Well, the way it reads is it's the authorization process for information processing facilities. So if you have systems that need to be upgraded, etc., is there a process that you go through to ensure that, for example, patches are secure?
Very methodical. You can obviously imagine that we're part of the stable. So I think we come under heavy scrutinization for something like that. So audit compliance is top priority. And probably the main reason is because it's also listed on the New York Stock Exchange, which means that there's all kinds of additional policies and procedures to abide by. So everything right down from Sarbanes Oxley to the smallest little policy and procedure. So it's very rigorously checked and implemented and enforced with severe penalties and reprimands and even dismissals if it's not adhered to. So, yeah.
Okay, so that's interesting. So as a South African bank, has to comply with international standards.
Yeah, in many cases. Yeah.
Okay. Moving on, the next one looks at contact with special interest groups. So within the industry, are you in touch with other?
Oh, yeah, no, definitely. The Banking Council, the Payments Association, the Banking Ombudsman. We've set up a special interest group just on information on online security. So many of those, yeah.
Okay, good.
Because it's an industry problem. It's not a competitive space. So my online banking security, I don't think I've got one up on the other banks. If other banks are feeling the pain, I don't get registrations on my system and vice versa. So it's really an industry, non-competitive space, online security and fraud management.
Okay, that's good. And within South Africa, so do the banks talk to each other as well? Is this what you're talking about, the Banking Council?
Yeah, in the banks, yeah, among the banks in South Africa, yeah. And obviously we extend it further to involve the likes of the SAPS. We pull them into these discussions. We pull in the likes of the internet service providers because they've got a major role to play in terms of curbing phishing kind of emails out there.
Yes.
The likes of Striata that does email messaging. So there's a forum like that is sort of widely spread. So on the one level, just banks looking at how do we curb the problem, and then pulling the industry into to right actions.
Okay. That's very good. I didn't realize that there was so much happening here.
It's a worldwide major, major problem. You know, it's an industry that we're all trying to protect. So if I've got fraud, then the newspapers love to make sensation about it and registrations go down. And that's the kind of effect that I'm, and us as a banking industry, trying to stop, because it is ultimately very safe to do online banking.
Yes, fair enough. Okay, next section looks at within the people in the organization, is there information security awareness, education and training?
We do regular online sort of training modules that you have to comply to. So, and they include from online security to fraud awareness to money laundering, etc. So there's a bunch of those programs. People have to log onto the intranet and comply there, or do the training. And if they don't do that, there's also reprimands in that space.
Okay.
So, yeah.
And then I think because we're looking at online, your users are online, so then there's also the online awareness as well. So
yes.
Make the users aware of it.
So probably the biggest part of combating online fraud and phishing and all these kind of malicious attempts is the education part. So from a customer perspective, we do a heck of a lot of this stuff, from notices online about the latest phishing attempts, how to protect your PIN, how to transact safely, all those how-to kind of stuff, and make sure you do all these kind of things. To we send out newsletters, quarterly newsletters, and a large portion of that is consumed about safe online trading and what should you be looking at, and etc., etc. And then obviously, even if there's newspaper articles that either slate us for being vulnerable to phishing, the spin always becomes positive. So what we've managed to do is through the media, and specifically myself, I host and entertain the media fairly often in breakfast and stuff, and explain to them what's happening. So I think what's happened now is that the media has turned around to supporting us more than slating us, which is a nice turn. So even if something happens, like phishing with SIM card swaps, etc., the media picks up the positive angle, which is quite nice. And we've worked a lot on the media collectively amongst the banks. Even the radio stations, they phone me and I'm on the air and I explain to them what customers should look out for, should do, etc. So training is probably number one, you know, priority out there. And then obviously we, from a system perspective, see how safe we can make it, and there's ongoing actions there, but the other part is the education and training space.
Okay. That's very impressive. Okay. Then the next section looks at the controls. So it's talking about being aware of software that's coming into your system. So it would be like email attachments or people downloading software off the internet. And are there controls in place to actually scan these downloads, these attachments, and make sure that they are safe and not putting the organization at risk?
Absolutely. Yeah, no, definitely. Scanning software on the mail servers, check for EXE type of files. Everything in that email that relates to attachments gets scanned, and in most cases just blocked completely, preventing it from going through. The other one is there's very strict website browsing policies, so and a download policy as well, you know, so you can't just download anything from any network.
Okay.
There's certain sites that are prohibited that you can't visit. So those policies and procedures are all in place, yes.
Okay, and do you also stop things like ActiveX controls and JavaScript, you know?
Yes.
Okay. But then on the network side, is there network controls in place? Basically, yeah. It's data passing back between your internal and external networks.
Obviously through the firewalls and stuff.
Yes.
Yeah, no, very much so.
Okay. And then again, we're looking at policy. Is there, they're looking at information exchange policy, so it would be the type of electronic messaging that's happening over things like email, as well as, you know, MSN and those sort of instant messaging channels. Is that being looked at? Or do you have problems with that? Or do you
need to have a look at instant messaging. I'm not sure if it's blocked or scanned or checked. I'm really not sure about instant messaging. That's probably not in my space. I can have a look at that for you.
Okay. Thank you. Okay, and then electronic commerce transactions. Is there controls in place to look at transactions that are passing from, obviously, your systems over a public network?
I'm not sure I understand you 100% correctly. So if you say, so for instance, I go and book a flight on Kulula.com.
Yes.
Obviously, what we do is we bar sites that we don't favor or don't like. Kulula is not one of them, so we allow Kulula to be opened. And then, obviously, if a transaction takes place, it's through normal SSL encryption, and that we do allow.
Okay, yeah, it's looking at that. So if you're putting credit card information down and it's going, then passing over into a public network, so...
Yeah. Obviously, everything that is related to our online banking, we are a lot more strict and a lot more controls around it. So if there's third parties linking to our online banking system, the security levels are up the hell of a lot. I'm now specifically speaking about staff going and browsing the internet and paying and transacting. That's more the staff's space to ensure. But when it relates to our system, the network controls is horrendous.
Okay.
Horrendously tight.
Well, that's good. And then as well as non-financial information, like, for example, updating personal information.
Oh, yeah, there's a whole bunch of confidentiality, privacy policies, in place that governs that. So policies such as we don't allow our users capture any data on third-party websites that could possibly be affiliated to apps. So, for instance, we run a marketing campaign. We get a marketing company to set up a little website where you can register and get an email from. We don't allow those kind of things. All data is captured on our network through our SSL servers, with our SSL servers being invoked, etc. So, data privacies and policies are also very, very tight.
Yes, your systems are very, very secure. Okay, and the last one looking in this section is looking at publicly available information. So it's saying the information that you make publicly available on your websites, is that protected from unauthorized modifications? I mean, specifically in the bank's case.
What? Obviously, we've got the copyright policies on our website that prohibits anybody from taking that copy and manipulating it. It's difficult to track and enforce that, obviously. But luckily with our client base, we get notified of any malicious use of that very quickly, and then we claw back on that and make sure that it's closed down, etc. So our disclaimers and policies on the bottom of on our footer on the COSA is in a heck of a lot of detail, very, very detailed, to comply with ECT Act legislation, etc. So the policies are very, very tight. Obviously, the enforcement of that is not as easy, but we get to it very quickly if notified.
Okay. I think maybe this question is not clear. It's specifically looking at the content on the website, if somebody can hack into it and change
and manipulate them.
Yes.
No, it hasn't happened in the last 8 years that I've been running this space, so no, it's all behind firewalls, the databases are secured. It's really not redirects, none of that has happened, so the policies to do that and procedures to curb that and prevent that is very tight. Very,
okay. Very. That's good. Okay. The next section looks at...
And also the data is hosted internally to us. So we don't have an external hosting policy. Although we sit with HTTP servers just sitting at solutions, but all the data sits on our network. So access control to that data is tight, very tight.
Okay. Okay, the next section looks at monitoring. So it's saying, do you have audit logs that records, you know, users logging in, what they've done in the system, what they've changed, etc.?
Yes, everything gets logged.
Okay.
From successful attempts to failed attempts, everything's logged.
Okay, and then are those logs themselves protected? Because, I mean, obviously it's got...
Yeah, definitely.
Okay. And then these, since you are monitoring the system, do you actually go through it and look at the results of this monitoring activity?
Sorry, please say again. I missed that one.
These audit logs, like you're keeping a track of the use, the user's activities on the system. Do you ever review those audit logs and review what people are doing?
It's there for trend analysis. So what we do is we try to gauge trends, and from the trends we do review to make changes and stuff. So if we see that people fail the log on attempts, we try to understand why. Failed log on attempts could be hacking kind of attempts, and we try to understand where it originates from, etc., so that we can put blocks in place. So if we see that there's an IP address from Nigeria that keeps on trying to lock in different access account PIN number combinations, we go and see where it originates from and put in actions to investigate the perpetrators. So, yeah.
Okay. Okay, next section looks at the user's responsibilities in the system. The password use. So users are required to follow good security practices in the selection and use of passwords.
Yeah.
Okay. And then the user equipment. So users shall ensure that their equipment is not unattended and is appropriately protected.
Yeah.
Okay. Network access.
Yeah.
So they're talking about routing controls. So basically what they're saying is the way the network is wired up, so that information flows in a manner that is secure. So pretty much like your PCs will all be behind a firewall. You'll have nothing in a DMZ or, you know, publicly accessible space.
Absolutely. All of that is definitely in place. So there's partitions on the network with sensitive areas. You can imagine from a banking perspective, there's many different DMZs with different levels of control. Customer or staff PCs sit behind the firewalls. Dial-up into the network is very, very well monitored. There is systems running in the back to see what applications are installed on PCs and remove them without you knowing that if it's malicious. So all those kind of things are very much in place.
Okay, that's good. Okay, operating systems. So they look at, do you have secure logon procedures?
Yep, definitely.
And
control. That's going to be your next question.
Sorry?
Patch control.
No, I'm not getting there yet. No, the next one was looking at user identification and authentication. So using things like... Well, obviously passwords, smart cards, biometrics. Have you...
At this moment in time, logging onto your own PC is only password controlled, and it's the main password that gets set up and gets refreshed on a monthly basis, where you need to set up and create a new domain password.
Okay.
And gets revoked if you don't reset it in time, and all those kind of things are pretty much in place.
Okay. And just out of interest, have you looked at things like biometrics?
We use biometrics. We use tokens as part of our RAS dial-up process.
Oh, okay.
So one-time password token generation to log onto the network if you do remote dialing.
Okay, but not for your online banking, not for your customers.
We make use of the one-time password via SMS.
Okay.
So we see it as a form of strong authentication because it uses a different channel, outbound SMS versus you transacting online on internet banking. So we see it in the same fashion as a one-time password generated off a token.
Okay.
A token distribution space is tough. So I've got a million internet banking customers to issue them with a hard token or some sort of biometric is going to be very difficult. In a South African context, with our postal service, with our branch, just being very distributed. And then to make sure they maintain and optimally run is even more difficult. So if my token breaks in Porphyro branch, will they have replacement hardware? That's a tough space to get into.
Okay, yeah, that was just out of interest. Okay, then there's looking at session timeouts. Are inactive sessions shut down? And
1 minute, yeah.
Okay. And when working on sensitive systems, is there a limited connection time that's allowed?
Oh, yes. When you log on to internet banking, yeah, there's a 1 minute inactive session timeout space.
No, this is something different. This is if you are, do you restrict user time? Not inactive time, but actual user time.
No, I want my users to transact as much as they can. I make money from it.
Fair enough. Okay, there's not much more. Mobile computing. So they're looking at working, you know, when you're sitting in restaurants and outside and there are wireless networks. I don't know whether with an app, so you've got, like, you know, coffee areas or canteens or whatnot with wireless networks and other controls in place that if anyone's sitting there with a laptop, access is limited.
We are very skeptical of wireless networks. And therefore have not enabled any wireless networks within through eavesdropping and all those kind of things. What we do is, obviously, as part of our remote dial-in process, if you make use of the wireless network, there's a VPN tunnel that is set up through that token, so I can jump onto a wireless network. As soon as I connect into, and I'm a staff member, I climb onto a VPN tunnel.
Mm-hmm.
But if I'm just a general user out there, we can't really control wireless networks.
Okay, so when you get visitors that come into the building, I mean, they would have to, unless they're working, you know, that they came there to work on site, then you would give them this user.
We will set them up with a full profile then.
Okay.
Yeah, so we are very conservative in that space.
Okay. That's fine. And then they term it teleworking. So it's basically if you have users working off-site, so staff or contractors working off-site and need access to your servers internally.
Yes.
Is there a policy in place to control that?
That's pretty much what I've said now, where we do VPN tunneling straight into our network through a hard token. So we install a piece of software on the machines.
Yes.
They make use of an internet connection that they can find, or we issue them with their own 3G cards.
Okay.
But we set up a virtual private network tunnel into our network and allow them to make use of the systems and the platforms that they are privileged to make use of. So it's not an open network access. It's very much access controlled based on specific applications of need.
Okay. And is there policy around it, or is it pretty much just once you have the access, then your access actually limits what you can and can't do?
So obviously banks are very methodical when they implement anything. So before we implemented remote access, there was a strict policy written, and that enabled us to enforce the system changes.
Okay.
So there's definitely a policy in place around that. And also then the policy in place as to good conduct, you know, so... pretty much Big Brother space, you know, so you can't go and visit sites that you should not be visiting because they will get marked and tracked and checked and you get reprimanded and stuff.
Okay. Okay. Okay, then they move on to cryptographic controls. I don't know if you do use cryptography, and is there policy around that?
I don't know if there's a policy. Now you're getting into serious IT space. I know we do cryptography, but the details of that I'm not 100% sure.
Okay.
So I know that that when you log on and the password is all... If you say the PIN password combinations are all stored in hardware security modules, HSM, with crypto cards in front of it that scrambles, de-scrambles and all that stuff, but I don't know the details around the policy whether what happens around that.
Okay. So maybe. Okay. Then they look at support processes. So if there is information leakage, I'm presuming there are controls in place to try and prevent information leakage. So things like if somebody's trying to email out files or trying to export data from your databases.
There's definitely controls in place for that. Obviously, email is a tough one to immediately pick up, but it's based on trends and stuff like that. So the email is probably the most difficult one. If it is extracting data off a database, those are system logs that are kept with password controls. So I can only get access to a system to try and extract data based on my profile. So there's very strict controls in terms of getting the data, firstly.
Yes. Okay, that's fine. And then looking at technical vulnerabilities. Okay, so if there is an exploit out there in the industry, then it looks at how quickly you become aware of it and then audit your systems to ensure that your systems don't have the same vulnerability as what's now become known.
I'm not sure I understand you 100% correctly.
If, for example, say Windows Vista, they discover there's some security vulnerability.
Okay.
So once it becomes known, how do you get it and start scanning your systems and making sure that you're not exposed to this vulnerability?
So we've got a very robust, centrally managed environment that manages all the patch control. So it's patch control. So obviously through our partners, the Microsoft, etc., they inform us first as to what vulnerability they've picked up.
Yes.
And based on those vulnerabilities, we then start with patch control, and it's essentially downloaded to the PC. So staff don't need to do anything.
Okay, so it's all automated.
All automated in the back, yeah.
Okay. And then... The next section is looking at incident management. There's two controls. So one is there process in place for information security events to be reported through to appropriate channels as quickly as possible?
Sorry, say again?
Are there procedures so that information security events can be reported through to the appropriate management channels?
We've got a information security area. It's called ISO, Information Security Office.
Yes.
And they manage all incidents, control incidents, it all gets reported to them. They're the custodians of the policies, etc. So, yes.
Okay. And then... on the people side, are people aware of how they need to report incidents through? So if something happens, what they must do?
Yeah, good question. Are they? people pick up what they need to know at the moment, you know, so... Obviously, the information security office is well known in the organization.
Yes.
As the custodian. So I suppose they all send stuff through to them.
Okay. So should I mark that as a yes?
Yes. Yes.
Cool. Okay. The last section looks at compliance with legal requirements. I think you touched on this when we started off the conversation. So there's data protection of personal information. And that's a resounding yes. You've got to be careful with your user information that you have.
It's education and awareness. Is it that part?
No, it's about data protection. So it's the data that you hold should needs to be protected, and the privacy needs to be ensured as per relevant legislation. So I don't know what the South African government policy is about, you know, the data that you hold on behalf of all your users, but that you need to comply with whatever the regulation is. But do we not have? We must have data protection policies.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah. I'm just trying to think of examples to give you. Yeah, sure. I'm sure they're all in place.
That's what I needed to know. And then the company security policies. Then do managers need to ensure that their relevant departments comply with the company's security policies?
Oh yeah, it's really top down enforced. It's not even ensure that you comply. It becomes really top down enforced more than anything else.
Okay. And then technical compliance looks at, are the information systems checked regularly to ensure that they are compliant? So I suppose regular auditing.
Yes, no, definitely.
Okay, and that was it. That was the last of my questions.
Oh, excellent. Okay. No, that's perfect. Yeah. I think you can use that in any which way or fashion that you feel fit. That should be fine.
Okay. That's great. Your organization is very, very, very secure.
I think it is, yes.